here we are. This is Sex, Love, Psychedelics, and I'm your host, Dr. Kat, bringing you psychosexual conversations that will leave you intellectually turned on and hungry for more. Hey, lovers. Well, this is a fun episode. First time that I've ever been in a mutual interview where Amy and April from Shameless Sex and I all play moderators and share the episode across our two shows. So we are exploring my favorite topic and the focus of this show, sex and psychedelics. These two women are like my kindred spirits, and I love our cheeky, insightful conversation here. We give you access to our personal explorations and our discoveries in plant medicine and psychedelics. Some of these stories are beautiful and sweet, and some of them represent the darker, harder lessons that we had to identify. Each of them are profound and valuable for you, because all three of us believe in the power of healing and you finding your power and becoming fully expressed in your sexuality. But we also believe that you need to do your diligence to prevent further harm. So if you're needing support and vetting your practitioners for psychedelics, maybe you don't know what to ask for or what to look for, then hopefully this talk inspires you. And if you need more support, I've created a guide for you. The link is in the show notes, so you don't have to guess in the dark. Take your time, be safe out there, and listen to your gut reactions. Does your facilitator make you feel on edge, even though they say all the right things? Then that's not going to be what you need for your deepest healing. So check it out, link in the bio. And in 2024, I am hosting a couple of retreats for women and for couples involving ketamine as the power agent for revelations and change. Also connecting this with our sensuality and learning about who we are as erotic beings. I have seen and I have personally experienced profound states, insights, and deep spiritual healing. I would love for you to be a part of this with us. And if you would like to be placed on the waiting list, click the link in the bio and I will personally let you know when another spot opens up.
All right, everyone, it is interview time and we are here with a new guest. I'm very excited for this episode. This is with Dr. Kat Meyer, who has many titles, but is also from the Sex, Love, and Psychedelics podcast. We were just talking about how we all love all three of those things. And so this episode will be a collaboration of podcasters uniting to talk about sex, love, and psychedelics. If all three aren't your favorite things, then you'll probably learn some things. Maybe one will become.
And
yours.
The great thing is, I know Kat's in California, but a lot of counties are either decriminalizing psychedelics on some level, like psilocybin. I don't know if LA is like that, but Santa Cruz County, where we live, is. And so it's becoming almost easier and more normalized for people to experience psychedelics. So coming to a state near you, hopefully, easy access.
Coming to Ohio very soon.
I also want to give Kat a shout out because I am getting my sex ed certification. I'm almost done with it. And during one of the, it's a recorded seminar, but it's a conference. And I listened to your piece. It was about an hour.
Yeah. For Sexual Health Alliance?
Yes. Exactly. Okay. And it was on ketamine therapy in using ketamine as a means to heal sexual trauma. And I loved it. I listened to it twice. I actually had my partner listen to it too. And I love your work. So thank you for being here with us so much.
Yeah, it's my absolute pleasure. And you bring up a really good point of this, the concept of decriminalization and legalization that's happening and it's expanding. And this is why now more than ever, the conversations around safety, and especially when you're combining sex and psychedelics, is so important. And yet I haven't been hearing enough of those talks on some of these podcasts or some of these, things that people are presenting. It's all about like the excitement of sex and the excitement of psychedelics and a lack of the really grounded reverence that we really need to have with this. Because if we're going to heal, we've got to feel safe. We can't otherwise be able to melt and let go and surrender to the depths that we need to for that mm-hmm. change.
Yeah, that's so important. And I personally have been a part of a number of experiences or communities where they were combining, well, psychedelics as a form of healing without sex being a part of it, but sexual healing yeah. was a part of it because a lot of people came in with sexual trauma. And then also have had experiences or know people that are doing work where they're combining psychedelics with healing around sexuality. And one of my biggest complaints, fears about it is... Mm-hmm. People who are not really trained on mm-hmm. the consent safety or like trauma informed, but they're having these experiences like, well, it worked for me. So now I can go and bring the psychedelics. And also I happen to teach Tantra too. So I'm going to put the two together and go uh-huh. and like offer this to people. And so I'm not saying that it's not a valid thing, because I think there's some really powerful stuff there. So I guess my first question for you will be, you know, how, I have so many questions, but let's
start. I know. I want to know more about Kat, so the world knows too.
And I think that like maybe we can unpack our own personal stories, like getting into where we are today in the field of sexuality, and then our own experiences when how it coincides with like psychedelic use, but or healing. But one of my questions for you is how do you see these containers where people are bringing psychedelics to sexual healing? Why is it beneficial? You know, how do psychedelics complement that or even enhance the sexual healing that can happen outside of the psychedelic realm?
Yeah. Okay. This is such a loaded question. We can spend time just answering just this one question, because I think it touches on so many things. So psychedelics, I see as this powerful, avenue for redefining what sex is. You know, we've been conditioned, and you all both work with people and helping them to expand the definition of what sex is. We've been taught that it's penetration focus, it's orgasm focus, you're focused on the partner and getting them off. It's all, you know, like friction oriented and performance based. And then when you go into a psychedelic experience, you can realize, and this is from this is even from the research I've been gathering. I've been gathering phenomenological data from people who were doing this for themselves and finding that people are discovering that sex can be energetic. You know, it can be this energetic experience of exchange between two people. There can be a deep meditation and a dissolution of the boundaries between them, the other person, and the world. They can feel like with MDMA is a really good example of this, that you follow pleasure instead of chasing for the orgasm. So it becomes like pleasure as this compass rather than being fixated on, am I performing correctly or am I getting myself off or them off from a genital perspective? And then also it moves it away from the genital so that you can fall into just like, oh, my whole body is orgasmic, or my elbow is orgasmic, or, you know, like something not traditional can be orgasmic. And so what I see is it creates these reference points for us in the complexity of what sex is, because there's so many components that make a good sexual experience. And then we can use that as a reference point outside of the sexual or the psychedelic experience, as in like implement the practices that help us to be able to go back and achieve that. And I like to talk about one of my very first experiences with ayahuasca. I think this was like 10 years ago. And I went into the bathroom and looked into the mirror, and I just fell in love with the adorableness of myself. Like, I sat there and I was like squishing my chubby cheeks and I was like playing with my eyelashes. I was like, oh my God, I'm so adorable, you know? And that really anchored into this embodied experience of what self-love was, mm-hmm. you know? And in Tantra, I remember one of my teachers, Charles Muir, when he was having us practice Tantra and eye gazing with somebody, he would say, you know, connect to the adorableness of this other person. And in those practices with him, it was this expansion and then just this softness of like love, like, oh my God, you're adorable type of love. And here I felt that in this ayahuasca experience. And I was like, oh shit, damn. I'm sharing these memes on Instagram saying like self-love yourself and like so much everybody else's too, you know, like just love yourself. But that is such a complex concept for people to reach. If you don't know where you're going, if you don't know what it is that you're trying to experience, it's a very intellectual concept until you understand the embodied sense of it. So mm-hmm. I see that with psychedelics, like the concept of surrender. Like you can feel what surrender is and like what it is to actually let go in that space, or you're in a terrible, like panic state and uncomfortable, you know? Same with self-love, same with, you know, embodiment or disembodiment. We talk about these things, but we don't realize they're intellectual until that point.
Mm-hmm. Is that what led you? So I love that you mentioned ayahuasca, but I was wondering what led you to primarily focus your practicing something that's taking psychedelics and sex, right? And commingling those things, which I think is incredible. And recreationally, I've done that, right? But I love that you practice it. So what led you to want to specialize in this amazing and vast world?
Yeah. So my background, I've been a sex therapist for 13 years. I dove into Tantra and BDSM very early on. That was like, I think 13 years ago, I started with Tantra and BDSM 10 years ago. So I had a lot of that background and realizing that sex was psychedelic even before I was, you know, regularly getting into psychedelics or more seriously, more, you know, intentionally getting into psychedelics. It was like, wow, you know, you can enter into these trance states and these altered states of consciousness, like, you know, by being tied up and suspended from, you know, the rafters. Like, and then the psychedelic work, I started, you know, going to ceremonies and going deep into the ceremony work. And I also have a background in Reiki energy. So understanding even these out of the box concepts of healing and like of what's possible in the body and in the mind and the psyche. So it was, you know, some of these ayahuasca ceremonies that I really got to heal some of my sexual trauma from my childhood and then my early adult years, and getting to see how dissociated I was, that I wasn't able to see, even though I was in therapy myself, like I wasn't able to see that I was not fully there most of the time, or because you know, being able to let go or pleasure in the body and orgasms in the body. So that was really helpful. And then it was 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I started studying the ketamine work, and because that's what's legal. And then going into that route, studying MDMA therapy with MAPS, and then just really diving into understanding the complexity of all of these different types and learning that every, you know, psychedelics can be erotic. I think people mm-hmm. oftentimes think like mushrooms, they just make me go into my head and then I can't, yeah. you know, like, whatever. I just want to work on things in my head, you know, want to be antisocial. But this, yeah, tying the kink and tying the tantric principles into the experience, I've developed a model called Erosynthesis that teaches people how to have these erotic experiences. And it's powerful for both in a psychedelic experience, but then also as an integration tool. And it uses breath and it uses the concept of like a self-container and like a partner container, so that we, and body movement and sounds and, you know, even visualizing things to be able to invoke and you know, sublimate or draw up that energy and rather than it being localized to just the genitals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love all of what I can resonate. I'm sure April too, we're like, oh, resonate with all of that. And we are, we're big ayahuasca people over here in terms of it being like our, I personally wasn't raised with religion. April, I don't think you kind of were, not really ish. So when I discovered ayahuasca in 2014, it was like, oh, this is my, it's like, to me, it's like earth church or love church.
And I love that.
And it's been really important in my life, and also in April's. I'm speaking for her, but I believe so. And I've had this experience. So I think with so many different psychedelics, I've had experiences that are related to sex. And I can speak to, like, I mean, if you call cannabis a psychedelic, I've had a lot of those experiences. Ketamine, I have had a lot of those experiences. And then, but with ayahuasca in particular, you're just talking about that. I remember being, you know, I'm a sex educator, I'm a sex and relationship coach. My sex drive was turned off for like 2 years. It was after a major trauma or rupture in a relationship that I was still in at that point. And had, you know, has my partner saying, like, I'm in love with another woman, I'm gonna leave you for this other woman. And I got pregnant a month later on the IUD and had an abortion. And then he did leave, and all these just like, whoa, my heartstrings, everything just, it made sense why my body shut down, but I didn't understand it. And so for 2 years, I'm like working on this, like trying to feel again. I had no sex drive, no connection to my genitals. I know all the tools, they're not working, because I know them conceptually, right? Like intellectually, I know them as an educator, but my body wasn't coming online to really figure out like what I needed to come back online. And in an ayahuasca ceremony, one of my intentions was, I want to reconnect with my body, be less mind, more body. And it was one of those like 3-night sits. You know, the first night it's like, oh, just getting all the things out. And second night it's like, oh, sunshine and rainbows. And third,
never for me. The second night's always my
head. Really?
Oh, yeah.
It's hit or miss for me. That was just how it was for me then. But the third night, within like 10 minutes, which usually takes me a while for the medicine hit, 10 minutes, I leave my body entirely. I was like, did I just smoke toad medicine in the middle of an ayahuasca ceremony? Which I didn't. But that's not what happened. I came to, and all of a sudden I had this like 3 to 4 hour experience of just being all body and very little mind, to the point where I couldn't even be mindful. Like I'd be like, bleh, and like hitting things and like making all this sound, but also I could feel everything. Every cell was like from my pussy to my fingertips was just like, here's what it's like to feel everything and not have your mind in the way of controlling and getting, you know, blocking things for various reasons to protect yourself. It didn't come to me that I needed to leave the relationship. That came to me a couple months later. That's what I needed to happen. But I had this 4-hour like experience of, you know how to feel, you know how to be in your body. There's just something in the way. And it was really powerful. And I think that opened up the doors to finally move forward to figure out what needed to happen so I could come back online. So anyways, this is my long-winded version. I don't know, April, have you had experiences like that too?
That's great. And I really want to highlight before we go on to April is that so many people shame themselves for their body not being sexual or not orgasming or not. And even sex educators like us, I've written posts about this too during grieving times where my body was just not erotic. And that's really important. I think Evelyn Whitney also has talked about it. Jaya has talked about it. And the importance of not shaming your body for that, but really dropping into what is the information that I can gather here. And I think psychedelics can add that lubrication inside our psyche to be able to tune into that or into our bodies. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, take those times as resting times or platonic touch times. You know, sensuality doesn't have to be erotic or sexual. It can just be affection to the body. And so I love that you just expressed that. Like, thank you. Let's de-shame these moments of ebbs and flows and allow that to just be real, like real and raw and right.
Yeah.
I have to say, I love that we're having this conversation because Amy and I definitely have been exploring the plant medicine world for quite some time, her even before me. And I never really understood what the medicine would do for me. And one thing that I've realized, because, and this is how it relates to sex as well, all of my insecurities about my body have come up, and like being able to actually love the vessel that I'm in. And I'm getting a little teary because I didn't realize how much like self-loathing that I did about what I looked like. It was like a point where it was breaking these almost, I felt like there were like branches that were holding me down from like my spirit wasn't like able to be released. And as soon as I finally, like you were talking about, Kat, when you were in the bathroom, just gazing at yourself, I didn't do that. I just saw myself, a mirrored version of myself in front of me, and I wasn't in the bathroom and there wasn't a mirror. And I was like, you are beautiful. And just sobbing and kind of releasing this self-hatred that I'd had for like like through my 30s, right? For whatever reason, from, I guess, conditioning or feeling like there was a perfect way I should look or be, it really inhibited me from being, I think, completely fearless in my sexuality and kind of helped me be more vulnerable, drop into my body. The next experience I had sexually where I was like, you are fucking awesome. And I think that's something that I didn't ever really understand my sexuality until plant medicine, because yes, psilocybin mushrooms got me in my head. The last thing I want to do was have sex with someone. I would be like, right? Like, no. And then even, you know, I've had experiences with LSD and even more so, definitely don't want anybody to touch me on LSD. I'm like, no, I'm going to try to solve mathematical equations right now. And ketamine has actually, and I'd love to speak a little bit more about that, because ketamine can be, you know, people think about it as a horse tranquilizer. I've heard somebody
the horse tranquilizer.
and for that medicine, it's cerebral. Like you are getting a lot of headiness, but it's also, there's an embodiment there, and it does, I feel like, help you get out of your head, and drop into the sensations that are occurring. Now, I haven't done the therapy piece with it, so yeah. I haven't worked with a practitioner. It's kind of, but I feel like it is going to therapy. Just like ayahuasca is like 100 therapy sessions in one sit. I feel like ketamine can be maybe like 2.5.
But, you know what? Well, I will interject that though, because I think that myth has been passed around so much. It's only worth 10 years of therapy if you've been doing 10 years of therapy.
Like, that's a great point.
Yeah. Like the best work that I've done is plant medicine in conjunction with therapy, because you can have these insights, but it doesn't necessarily change the patterning and the programming inside. We have a reference point, but these are habits formed and neurocircuits formed for a really long time. So if we're not integrating, as in, and that's a word that's used but not practiced often, if we're not consistently doing practices to return ourselves back to that state, then it just was a great time. And same with sex. You can have like the best fucking sex on, you know, Molly and GHB. But if you're not integrating what you just learned in there, then it was just a great fuck.
Like, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. It is like, these are all medicines. You can treat them like medicines, right? And people get really freaked out when you talk about drugs, like those are drugs. Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, but are you popping something from the pharmacy?
Yeah, that's a drug. Yeah.
You know, no, there's no shame.
Alcohol's a legal drug. Yeah. So
I think as long as you're using the medicine and integrating exactly the intention and honoring what it can do for you. Important too.
With ketamine in particular, so something we talked about outside of ketamine, we've talked about our podcast as like a self-love thing that's hard for people to do when they have body shame, specifically if it's like the rolls on your body, like the fat and your belly and your thighs. And so one of the things we talked about is like, you know, getting in front of the mirror, or if it's not in front of the mirror, on your own as a practice to learn to love your body, is to actually touch those parts of yourself and send them love and find a way to love them. Maybe it's not like, here's the whole, you know, like roll on my belly, but it's like, oh, the texture of my skin or the shape of my belly button. Like you can find these little things. But that for me, when I practice that, it's worked. But it's like with psychedelics, it really works. I can get in there, and that's what I feel like psychedelics are. It's almost like sleepgasms to me with psychedelics, right? It's like gets rid of this whole layer of bullshit that my mind getting in the way of all these things. And now I'm fully in my body, and all my cells can experience this. So I've had this specifically with ketamine where I'm like, you know, alone massaging my whole body, and then I'm grabbing at these parts of my body that I don't usually like. And I'm like, they feel so good. I love these. I love these parts of myself. And that was really powerful. It was like, it was super helpful.
It really is. And I think ketamine gets a bad rep because it's stigmated as a party drug, and people have seen people on K-holes and are like, I don't want to do that. That doesn't look fun. But it was in my ketamine assisted therapy training where I was like, I'm going to figure out how I can use this for sex therapy. And we did an experiential with a lozenge. I think it was 150 milligrams. And I was breathing and I was doing my tantric practices. And I was like, okay, I'm starting to float out of my body. Let's see if I can focus on my body. Here's my hands. Here's my belly. Here's my toes. Here's my pussy. And I was like, okay, we're going to breathe into this. We're going to, you know, visualize energy. And I ended up having a full-blown energetic orgasm. Mm. And so when I sat up and we were in our integration circle, like, mind you, this is a room full of doctors and therapists, and they all look at me and they're like, so what was that over there? And I was like, ah. So it really opened this as a, you know, again, I'll use the word reference point that even ketamine can be erotic. And the reason why, and I see this happen in my sessions a lot of time, I specialize in sexual trauma. So it feels unsafe, or it can feel unsafe to be in the body. You know, so many of my clients have anxiety and depression that makes it hard for them to be in their body. And so with ketamine, it increases the threshold of what you can emotionally tolerate and physically tolerate. It lifts the heaviness of the depression, anxiety, or chronic pain. It's great for chronic pain so that you can be with your body. You can feel pleasure. You can feel and connect with emotions without dysregulation. And that's the key part, because if we want to reprocess trauma, if you're getting dysregulated, you're not going to be able to reprocess it. It's like in the sober state, in my sessions with clients, they're dysregulated. Well, now we need to go back and downregulate and self-soothe and then go back into some of these challenges. So here it makes it so much accessible. And so I'll have clients like, you know, start to touch themselves or breathing into it. And they're like, oh, it feels so good. And that's rewiring. Again, like you said, about your body, April, it's like, now you can connect with it and you can start that new relationship from that.
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful that I am more connected to my body because it took that long. So for everyone out there who is listening to this and perhaps they want to dive into psychedelics, right? Whatever they, maybe it's ketamine, maybe it's psilocybin, maybe it is ayahuasca. Would you recommend having a professional around, or I'm asking this because I know the answer,
we know the answer,
but I just don't want someone to listen and be like, oh, I'm going to find a ketamine on the dark web and I'm going to go. I'm like, oh, no, God. Let's not do that.
Yeah, no, so, I've spoken to someone who tried to be her own therapist on ketamine. It's not a good idea. It does not work well.
So what do you suggest for someone that is, they want to explore this piece? They're like, I believe that I've read the research. I'm listening to Kat talk about this and I want to pursue this. Talk about the maybe some of the steps.
Yeah.
Please, oh, goodness. Please. Yeah. I'm like bossing. I'm like, please.
Yes, daddy.
Oh, I like that.
So safety, reverence is the most important part around this, because, you know, I like to say, use the metaphor that psychedelics are like a sharp knife. They can cut the bullshit, but they can also cut us if we're not careful. So working with somebody who is trained, vet your practitioners, vet your shamans. Don't just take somebody because your friend's aunt's boyfriend went to them. Like, really vet them, interview them, ask them questions. I have a free guide on my website for people to help guide those questions. And then tune into your body. How do you feel with their responses? Because there is, unfortunately, with the underground movement, there's a lot of reported abuse that happens. And that's because, you know, for many reasons. First of all, there's a power dynamic that happens with somebody who's seeking healing and someone who's providing healing. Also, you add psychedelics in there and it makes, it increases our sense of conviction and truth with a capital T. So some people will experience, oh, this shaman is my soulmate and now I'm in love with them, you know? And so I've heard and witnessed people, you know, start relationships there that are not equal power. You just have to call that out. There may be a mother wound or a father wound in there or something that, you know, we're looking for being saved. And so just being aware of how blurry boundaries can get in those states and how our reality can be, you know, full of projections. So just be consciously aware, take your time to integrate, you know, after your experience. And And establish those conversations ahead of time to create that safety. Also check with their training. You know, people are calling themselves shamans. People are calling themselves like, oh, now I'm doing plant medicine. I'm like, girl, you just been doing a sex therapy or a sex coaching training like 6 months ago. Like, no.
You're new. Yeah. Takes more time than that.
I don't care if ayahuasca told you that this is your path. Like, then take 6 years to train to do that. Then
it's a long path.
That's what you were talking about. Amy was talking about this, like trusting the folks in the beginning of the show that you were talking about how it can be it's not only vulnerable, but you can get really people could take advantage.
Yeah.
If they are.
And I think a lot of it's like the wounded healer thing, right? Like, so, and I'm a self-identified wounded healer. I got into the sexuality world because I didn't understand my body. I didn't understand my orgasms or how to even have them. So I am that, but I spent many years being trained before I started, like, I'm going to go teach and work with people on sexuality. And I think that the wounded healer is a wonderful thing because they can really show up in a powerful way because they also have compassion. I've been there. But there still is a really important aspect that comes with training and when it comes to sex and psychedelics, and you put the two together, I think you need even more. It's really
not
powerful.
Even wounding though. I think wounding is a plus. I think it's the God complex healers.
Oh, those ones. Yeah.
They're like,
I'm going to be on a pedestal.
I'm going to heal you.
I'm your guru.
Yeah. Basically.
I know a couple of those.
Cult, and you're like, I don't know if I'm going to drink that Kool-Aid.
Well, people do though. So people get all enamored, like you're talking about, like, you know, I'm a shaman now. And then people come out of their experience like, oh my God, are you God? Are you my mommy, my daddy, my lover? Are we meant to be together forever?
Mm-hmm. I have a deep affliction to the word shaman when it's like somebody that's white from Connecticut. That's like, you know, whose name is like
Bill.
Brad or Bill. Yeah. I'm like,
your name is Bill.
I don't know. I can't get, that's just me though. I might be throwing shade. So sorry.
I mean, shaman is, you know, originally that word is from Russia. It's also just become such a, like, people don't question the origin anymore. They also don't question the origin of the medicine or the origin of, you know, the teacher. And so that's what I want to emphasize. Like, when we have experience of trauma, especially in our childhood, like complex PTSD, our ability to discern boundaries is already fuzzy. And so we can enter into some of these dynamics. And in the research that I'm performing is that many people, or God, I think it was like, I don't want to misquote. It was like 4% to 7% of people had an unconsensual sexual advancement by a shaman or a facilitator. Wow. And then a small percentage of them, you know, went through or bypassed their own boundaries or a sense of, you know, this doesn't feel good because they thought that the person would, that it would benefit their healing or that there would be repercussions if they didn't, or that they were confused that whether this was right or wrong. And so that tells me like, okay, we, as much as I wish that the responsibility would be on the facilitators solely, because we really need to step up our game as facilitators and just make this place safe. But we've got to empower the people who are seeking it too, you know, and teach them and educate them. So I wish they could step into these situations and be safe. And that's just not the case. So there's that in regards to facilitation. But then if people are doing this on their own selves, you know, and having these, their experiences with partners, like the first thing, you know, work with a therapist and a doctor about if you're a right fit, as in what's your family history of mental illness, you know, or diagnosis, what's your own, you know, if you have bipolar one, or if you have schizophrenia or psychosis in your family background, or even yourself, you need to not go towards the bland medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, I have held space for people who went into psychosis, and then we had to do a whole lot of work for regrounding, and it's still hard for them to ground. So, you know, there's very real possibilities of harm in that level. Also with psychotropic medications, you know, SSRIs, MAO inhibitors, do not mix. Mm-hmm. And there are many other of those psychotropic medications that don't mix with plant medicines. Same with stimulants and ADHD medications. You know, Molly and ADHD medication should not mix. You know? Mm-hmm. And so people are bypassing these experiences for, you know, because they're like want to be in this, you know, you have that, but it's not for everybody. Mm-hmm. And then when you're considering like who you're experiencing some of these substance with, can you trust the person? You know, are you having consent conversations ahead of time, expectation conversations ahead of time, you know, boundaries, and knowing that, again, the threshold of what you will allow and the threshold of what you can tolerate increases in an altered state. And so you might do something that you wouldn't do in a sober state. And then on the other side, be confused, be disgusted, be upset and hurt, and be stuck in this, well, I said yes, but why does this still feel terrible in my body? And mm-hmm. so it's just the number of people I've had on my Instagram tell me stories, because I provide these education pieces on my Instagram, and then people will send me stories about, yeah, I fell in love with this guy and then, you know, on MDMA, and then it became an abusive relationship and it took me a long time to get out because we could just kept doing plant medicine to repair. Mm-hmm. But then we'd fall back in love, and then I would just, you know, it would fall back into those same patterns. So it's just like, you know, we can't bypass the prep process.
I'm glad that you brought that up, because people do. And I know Amy has something to say. I just wanted to just mention that people do. I've heard many people say like, everybody should drink ayahuasca. And I'm like, no. It can crack people. And you just mentioned like, if there are, if there's a history of mental illness or certain medications that can interact. I mean, we've seen people crack in ceremony, and it's not fun for anyone. It sucks. And you're in your own experience, and you're like, I feel for this person because they are going through a lot. And
by the way, when we say crack, we're not saying you're just having a hard time.
Sorry. Like, yeah.
Right. The psyche has cracked and now needs a lot of repair.
Sorry about my it's like Amy and I would say if we're together. Yeah. Hard times are normal, but it is something. I mean, I've heard that from people with LSD never coming back. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, that is a little scary, which is why always start small, right? If you are going to do those things, be in the care of people that know what they're doing.
Yeah, as I say that, I think feel like that just is so important to be in the care of people who know not only what they're doing and are really experienced and in integrity with their work, but also that you resonate with, right? Like if you don't resonate with their energy, your system might find all these reasons to keep walls and blocks up. So even if they're the most fabulous person and professional practitioner, they might not be your kind of person. And to go into such an intimate space, at least for me, that's really important to me. I've been with people who are highly experienced, and my system's still like, I don't really like feel safe opening here. And that's okay. Just like shopping for a therapist or a partner, you know, find the right fit and don't just settle and like, oh, it works in this one area. One thing that came to mind for me was kind of outside of psychedelics, but kind of goes hand in hand with that, is in the Tantra world, I had this experience where someone offered me, someone that I kind of knew, and actually I'll just name it, was from Source Tantra. So study under Charles Muir, wonderful human. And I have no bad feelings about this person or this experience, except that if I had a lot of trauma, it would have not been a great experience, because this person offered me a free tantric massage, involved G-spot stimulation if it went to that place. And they set boundaries in the beginning. I came over, it was like, it's gonna be a 2-hour session. It's free because they're practicing. I worked at, you know, I owned a sex shop. And so I was like, oh, you know, she must be down. And that's how they thought, but like, she might be down. And I was like, yeah, I'm down. My body's my experiment research project. And so the boundary was like a 2-hour container at this person's house. They did a good job. Like, here's the boundaries. My clothes are staying on. But they also said, I'm not going to kiss you or anything, but if you want to kiss me, you can. And I was like, interesting. Okay. And,
Is that norm? Is that,
I'm new to this. I'm new to this, this world, but I'm like, I'm trained in
and you
consent.
Knew that person before. It wasn't just a random, right?
Not random, but I know them that well.
Okay.
And just fast forward to this experience, wonderful human, felt very safe, but got real high on Tantra, right? Like your body is having this, like, I'm having this like orgasmic, like juicy experience. So naturally my body is like, I want to kiss you. You said that is okay. So I kiss this person. Then it turns into the 6-hour experience of us like making out / like him still being my practitioner. And I left there feeling, you know, high on cloud 9. But what happened was I thought I had feelings for them and they thought they had feelings for me. And the next day I woke up like, wait, do I? And then we hung out again and he like brought me flowers or something. And I was like, oh, I don't have feelings. And then I had to deal with like letting him down and all these things. So this is my example of like a very, so I'm bringing this to boundaries. Like not only having your own boundaries as someone taking psychedelics or working with someone, but I would imagine maybe you can elaborate on this, like, and this, I can make it a question, knowing that they have very strong boundaries and they're going to hold that in the container and not break that at all is probably really important. So my question for you would be like, how do you look for that? How do you ask a potential practitioner, how, what are your boundaries so I know I'm safe?
Mm-hmm. And that's the hard part, right? Because people can also say the right thing. And that's why I encourage people to tune into their body reactions, their body responses too. But in, as it relates to psychedelic work with a facilitator, it should not involve sex. Like I just, that's, you know, as a sex educator who teaches sex and psychedelics with a facilitator, I don't believe that. Although I do know that there are sex workers and that there are, you know, tantricas who are using it too. It just makes it so muddy. It makes it so much more confusing and challenging. So that's where I start. You know, I have many, many stories that would support that, but I just want people to ultimately be safe. You can have the best sex of your life with your own self on psychedelics. You don't actually have to have another person. And I think that's really empowering to self-source your own ability. I've had full-blown erotic, like spine undulating, feeling like, you know, the God penetrating me, you know, and it was just me fully clothed without, you know, so again, redefining what sex is. But then I also, you know, as somebody is talking about what their role is for being a facilitator for your movement. If there's, I think April, you said God complex, you know, if there's somebody who's saying, I'm going to heal you, that's a red flag. You know, tune into what that feels like, because we don't want somebody to disempower us by taking away our own innate healer, you know, our own ability to heal our own self. So yes, a facilitator can ask us questions that might facilitate a deeper experience. Me as a therapist, and when I'm working with ketamine, I'm asking them questions while they're inside their experience, and that deepens their process. But I'm not the one that's healing them. I'm following where they're taking me. So there's that. And then also, I think it would be, it's powerful. As a therapist, we have ethical codes. You know, I don't have dual relationships with my clients, meaning I don't have a relationship of friendship or a relationship of business or anything outside of the therapeutic container. And, you know, most coaches and underground facilitators and shamans, they don't have those code of ethics. And so there can be the murkiness of what is this relationship between us. And I like to hold a clean container so that their projections can come up and I can hold that. Whether if I'm, you know, a friend with them, that just makes it so much harder, because am I trying to preserve the friendship or am I trying to help them in their own healing process?
That's a great point. Yeah. One thing I wanted to know from either or both of you, because in my experience, what I found within my plant medicine journeys, because there's been a lot, is that because of my, I will say this lightly, but because of my issues with the masculine, right? Specifically my daddy issues, let's call it that. I have been able to go deeper with a facilitator that is a woman than I have been with facilitators that have been men. And I don't know if that is related, but because I always feel like I have to please the man. Mm. And so I will be like, oh, am I in trouble? Am I purging too much? Am I being too much? And I'll be in my head again. And I feel like the most, most heart-opening and embodied sessions that I've had or sits have been facilitated by a woman. And so I don't know if there's anything to that to say to the audience listening, if they have maybe issues one way or the other, maybe they could find a practitioner that feels more comfortable, even if they don't know, like maybe I'll seek out a woman because I have triggers with dudes. I don't know. But if you, either of you have anything to say, maybe it's just me. Could be.
No, I think that's such a good question. And I want Amy to answer that too. But it's like, you know, as a therapist too, you know, when you are interviewing for therapists, some of us are drawn towards a female or drawn towards a male. And now that could be because of unprocessed, unfinished business that we have with our parental figures or the archetype of the, father or mother. And that can be beneficial or it can hinder. And so same with this plant medicine, it can also, we can use that as a intentional trigger that we can then look at and spend time in reflection. Or we can go the route of, somebody that we feel safer and that can also allow, I think that they can create different experiences. I will say two of the most beautiful ceremonies I've ever sat in were held by women. One was a fierce, fiery practitioner, and the other one was a soft elder in Costa Rica. And there was something really unique about those ceremonies because they activated different archetypes. An archetype is like a personified figure of these characteristics that we all have in ourselves. So one provided this reference point of a woman who was so strong and fiery, but compassionate and held strong space among an industry that is oftentimes male. And then the other one was so soft and loving and mothering and everything was fluid and just brought, like a gentleness into my own body. So I don't think there's right or wrong, except what's right inside the person and what intention they have going into the work and whether this person feels right.
Yeah, I agree with that. That would be my experience too, is the same thing as April, feeling safer working with women or having more powerful experiences of being in my body and embodying that and letting go and releasing whatever wants to come through. And I have had experiences with the masculine where it's healed issues with the masculine, but it had to be the right masculine. And one thing that comes to mind for me with that was, and I won't say names on here, but so I used to assist in 5-MeO ceremonial work for a couple of years back into old Amy days. Not that I'm that old, but and I would assist with someone. Let's see, how am I gonna be careful about saying the things? Anyways, so the person I would assist with, I'll just say I didn't feel very safe with, even though sometimes I would be sitting and they would be facilitating, that he would be facilitating for me. And actually he's the only one that I had those experiences with, that I tried 5-MeO DMT in the form of toad medicine. No, everyone's not frog medicine. You don't lick a toad. But it's a little different. But anyway, so I had these experiences with this person and I thought that it was great. I was having these deep experiences. And then went and had an experience with a friend that is someone that April and I both know, who's very like a gentle masculine. And oh my God, I was able to open up and release 10 times more, but I had no idea that I didn't feel safe with this other person, with this other man, and that my issues with the masculine were being just kind of like fed, oh, we're going to keep that outgoing, until I had this experience with someone that I felt even 10 times more safe with, and had this held this like soft, loving, unconditional love masculine. And so I just for me, I was like, oh yeah. And it healed that in a way. And when I say healed, it's not like forever healed. Like my daddy issues, my issues, the masculine, not forever healed, but it created an opening to some healing. So that's what comes to mind for me and my experience with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually had a similar experience with a facilitator who, looked at me while I was having this experience. It was very erotic. But his energy was like a consuming sexual, the way he was looking at me. And I called it forward. I said, I feel really uncomfortable with the way that you're looking at me. And he just nodded. And he's like, but you're safe. And I was like, it put me in such a confusing state.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know you're looking at me in this way, and I feel really uncomfortable. I think I'm safe. And he just like totally did not acknowledge it and just kind of nodded his head. And my friend who was also there with me, she saw it and felt it too. So for somebody who doesn't have self-awareness, how easily that can be, oh, I'm wrong and you're right, because you're the facilitator. And so it's giving, again, that power to somebody else. So it's just, yeah, it's beautiful. It's powerful, all of this work. And we just have to be aware and conscious and careful. earlier in the session, you shared these powerful moments with your own body and with your own sexuality in the plant medicine space. So how did you integrate that work? What did you do after? Did you have practices that helped you return there? What did that look like?
I journaled through the whole, probably about at least 2 weeks after. Sometimes I do every other day to try I journal the whole sit, right? So I can kind of take in the downloads. I set my intention and then we have an integration after. And typically if I don't go straight back into the stressful workload, because that's one thing that I've realized I need a couple of days to be calm and to really soak in and write down the downloads, because they're all coming. I call them downloads. I don't know what anyone else calls them, but I write down the downloads as I remember them throughout the next few days. Sometimes I'm not great at integrating because I have to go to meeting after meeting, or I have this. So that's one thing. If people are going to do some of that work, I think set aside time. That would be my advice from my experiences, is set aside time, at least a few days, to integrate the medicine. And then I still really, really try to practice this self-love thing. And which it's my conditioning and my habit is to criticize myself, right? And to just change the rhetoric, the dialogue that's in my head about myself. I try to connect more with Pachamama, the planet, and give a lot of gratitude as often as I can, because those are the things I take away ceremony after ceremony after ceremony after ceremony, right? It's like, be on this planet with love, treat the planet like it is your mother. Do you want to like turd on your mother? No, you don't. Maybe you want to treat your mother nice. So you don't want to turd on your mom. And I think maybe that's not super deep right now, but I think just that's the first few pieces. Those are the first few pieces that come to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can resonate with the integration and completion phase being the most challenging. Like, I can get there. I can do all like the preparatory stuff. I can be in it, have all the things. And then like, I have my list of all the things, the practices that I want to do after, is actually doing them. That's the hardest. And agree with April and like creating space and we're both major doers. You know, I think that it helps us to like feel, you know, purposeful and worthy, but also not really have to sit with ourselves and just be. So it's like really forcing that and being intentional about it. And for me, one of the things, at least when I was working on like the disconnection from my body or from my sexuality or my sensuality, I knew that a self-pleasure practice was going to be really, really powerful, and making that not just like, you know, trying to get off in 5 minutes to a couple days a week, but more like more days a week than not, having like a 20 to 30 minute session that wasn't about like having an orgasm. If an orgasm happened, that's cool. But just continuing the practice of staying connected to my body, right? Like, in speaking of the ayahuasca experience, I had this 4-hour, like, there's my body, I'm all online. And I did leave there and go right back to my life. And guess what? It was still off. And I needed to leave that relationship I was in and wasn't ready to do that yet. But if I, if looking back at it, if I were to do, 30 minutes every day of just like getting all my cells online, practicing that just in my own space with whatever wanted to happen in those sessions, I feel like I could have continued to open the door more and more and more. I think it's just harder for me to stick to it. I'm sure I think it's hard for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. These are longstanding programs inside of us and habit formations. Yeah. And for the next 72 hours for ketamine, and then for a week after with psilocybin, MDMA, ayahuasca, I think ayahuasca is longer, you have an extra sensitivity for neuroplasticity. So things are more pliable in your brain. So the more you actually take that time, exactly like the two of you are, with the journaling to rewrite some of these inner programmings, and then to repeatedly do that, you can help to change your brain and your body. But you just got to keep up with it. The secret sauce is the consistency.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Absolutely. And it's so in like immense how wonderful you feel after some of these really beautiful opening experiences with plant medicine, and even with ketamine as well, how more connected you feel. And also, none of these things and practices, from what I've experienced, are linear. So you could go and expecting one thing, mm-hmm. and you can come out with being flipped on your ass and thinking you're going to move to Alabama and have a goat farm. You know, you're like, where did that come from?
I had to sit with that for a couple of weeks before you actually go to Alabama.
Don't make any huge decisions right after. Okay. Yeah. Don't be buying a goat farm. And I am grateful that we are having this conversation because I don't think either of us have really talked about it on our show lightly. And I think that people have asked me about this very topic, and your show is primarily about all of these things, right? And which brings us, because we could talk to you for hours, but everybody has to go back to their beautiful lives.
We can ask one very quick question. I'll make it super quick. I know that we can't source here, like, here's where you go and find the ayahuasca and the ketamines. But what would be your advice? Because I'm sure we will get emails from people asking, like, okay, you talked about this. How do I actually do this? I live in Ohio. I know, like, for us over here, we can say, like, you know, go to places where it is legalized, if it's ayahuasca, you know, Peru, but don't just go anywhere because there's a lot of rental shamans there. So go, like, do your extensive research for the places that feel right for you. Or even Costa Rica, I think, where things are decriminalized. Or I would say also for ketamine, you know, depending on where you are, you can find, you know, a licensed ketamine therapist. But what would be your advice for folks who want to find various things regardless of where they live?
Yeah. And ayahuasca is legal under the format of a church, of a legal, you know, like a 501c3, I think that's what it is. Yeah. So you can find that. And then Costa Rica, there's many amazing facilitations, you know, places down there. Look at the facilitators. Like, again, go through the vetting process. You know, it just, you can find it online. It just is, when you find it online, call them, reach out to them, ask them questions, like, have an intentional, discovery call, whatever you want to call it, to be able to talk to them about it. But it's out there. It's out there. It's hard for me to, Third Wave has a great database of practitioners, and they have their own training program. And I've spoken for them as well on the concept of sex therapy using ketamine. So I know that they have a great resource. I'm trying to think where else. I mean, yeah, ketamine therapists you can find, but again, there's a big difference between a ketamine clinic and a ketamine therapist and an active ketamine therapist, you know, with, you know, different modalities. So really, like, call, talk, you know, do that. I think that's the biggest takeaway here. Be careful with going down to Peru and going down to Brazil. And, you know, yes, that is the homeland of, you know, ayahuasca. However, because of the spiritual tourism, there's a lot that's just being pillaged, and we don't always know what's in the medicine. So it can be mixed with many different things. So, you know, vet even where you go, don't just pop up down there and expect that you're going to, you know, universe is going to guide you to the right shaman. That's just not gonna,
for the universe to tell me.
I know. I've had my friends in the UK be like, oh, I want to go to a ayahuasca house party. And I was like, No, it's not like that. They're like, no, my friends just went to one down in London. I was like, oh my God. No, please no. I was like, this, I don't know what maybe you were doing.
I mean, I've been to one. It was not good. And I did not mean to go.
It's not a party. How can people work with you? Are you taking new clients?
Yes, I am taking new clients, both for ketamine. And then I also help people with the prep and the integration process around, you know, some of these other ones, just to create as much safety as possible. Again, you still have to work with your doctor and see if you're viable for that. But I really, really believe in the integration and the education. So I do provide that. And also I run retreats with ketamine. So starting in 2024 will be my couples ketamine retreat, as well as my women's and femme retreat. So those will be happening and be available for people. And otherwise, you know, Oregon and Colorado have the legal under the use of a trained sitter. Again, check in with that, because some of them only have 125 hours of training. And so some of them are therapists, some of them aren't. So just check in with that and see how you feel. And there are some people out there who are openly on social media talking about holding ceremonies and things like that. And I would not trust them with a yardstick to hold space for me. So feel into them. They might be saying all the right words, but like, if your nervous system is like, why do I feel weird? Like, please tune into that.
Yeah, trust your gut, everyone. And so how can people reach out to you or find your retreat information and more about you and your podcast?
Yeah. So sexloveyoga.com. You can also follow me on Instagram at sexloveyoga. And on my website, sexloveyoga.com is where my, you know, you can find my podcast, Sex Love Psychedelics, and you can find the retreats and online programs and that kind of thing. Yeah, the book.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And where can I find you?
I know this is a swap-a-doo. We're swapping. So we're Shameless Sex. We just wrote a book called Shameless Sex. It's out now everywhere, wherever books are sold, but you can check us out at shamelesssex.com. We have like hundreds of episodes. So lots to share with folks out there. Talking about sex never gets boring.
Nope.
No. And it's a constant flow of education for both of us. And we really love what we do. You can, check us out on all the socials. We're not really on is Twitter even a thing anymore?
Is it X now or
now
something?
It's X. We're not really on. We may have something. So, but it's at Shameless Sex Podcast. And yeah, we drop a new episode every Tuesday. And love your work, Dr. Meyer. And to all of our listeners out there, or to Kat's listeners out there, we'll see you next time. I'll say ciao for now.
Bye.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for tuning in, lovers. And if you want to experience more ecstasy and sexual liberation, head over to sexlovepsychedelics.com and learn about how you can join me for any one of my online or live events. And while you're there, grab my free guide on sex and psychedelics. Remember, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please contact your healthcare provider and local law before pursuing any of the products or psychedelics discussed. And one final note here. I make this show specifically for you. If you're loving the show, then be sure to leave me a review in iTunes or Spotify to let me know. Happy to be here and happy to serve. I'll see you next time on Sex, Love, Psychedelics.